He felt himself on an even keel emotionally, but there were some momentary relapses. One day, Paul Dirac saw him faint and fall to the floor, just as he had done the previous year in Rutherford's laboratory. "I still was not entirely well," Oppenheimer recalled decades later, "and I had several attacks during the year, but they became much more isolated and interfered less and less with work." Another physics student, Thorfinn Hognes, and his wife Phoebe also roomed that year in the Carrillo mansion and found Oppenheimer's behavior sometimes odd. Phoebe often saw him lying in bed, doing nothing. But then these periods of hibernation were invariably followed by episodes of incessant talking. Phoebe thought him highly neurotic. On occasion, some witnessed Robert trying to overcome an episode of stuttering. Gradually, with his self-assurance returning, Oppenheimer found that his reputation had preceded him. One of his last acts before leaving Cambridge had been to present two papers before the Cambridge Philosophical Society titled On the Quantum Theory of Vibration Rotation Bands and On the Quantum Theory of the Problem of the Two Bodies. The first paper dealt with molecular energy levels, and the second investigated transitions to continuum states in hydrogenic atoms. Both papers represented small but important advances in quantum theory, and Oppenheimer was pleased to learn that the Cambridge Philosophical Society had published them by the time he arrived in Göttingen. Robert responded to the recognition his publications brought him by throwing himself enthusiastically into seminar discussions, with such abandon that he often annoyed his fellow students. "He was a man of great talent," Professor Max Born later wrote, "and he was conscious of his superiority in a way which was embarrassing and led to trouble." In Born's seminar on quantum mechanics, Robert routinely interrupted whoever was speaking, not excluding Born, and, stepping to the blackboard with chalk in hand, would declare in his American-accented German, "This can be done much better in the following manner." Though other students complained about these interruptions, Robert was oblivious to his professor's polite, half-hearted attempts to change his behavior. One day, however, Maria Gerpert, a future Nobelist, presented Born with a petition written on thick parchment and signed by her and most of the other members of the seminar. Unless the child prodigy was reined in, his fellow students would boycott the class. Still unwilling to confront Oppenheimer, Born decided to leave the document on his desk in a place where Robert could not help but see it when he came next to discuss his thesis. "To make this more certain," Born later wrote, "I arranged to be called out of the room for a few minutes." This plot worked. When I returned, I found him rather pale and not so voluble as usual. Thereafter, his interruption ceased altogether. Not that he was by any means completely tamed. Robert could startle even his professors with his bruising candor. Born was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but because he sometimes made small mistakes in his long calculations, he often asked a graduate student to recheck his math. On one occasion, Born recalled, he gave a set of calculations to Oppenheimer. After a few days, Robert returned and said, "I couldn't find any mistake. Did you really do this alone?" All of Born's students knew of his propensity for calculation errors, but, as Born later wrote, "Oppenheimer was the only one frank and rude enough to say it without joking. I was not offended. It actually increased my esteem for his remarkable personality." Born soon began collaborating with Oppenheimer, who wrote one of his Harvard physics professors, Edwin Kemble, a veritable summary of their work. Almost all of the theorists seem to be working on Q mechanics. Professor Born is publishing a paper on the adiabatic theorem and Heisenberg on Schwankungen, fluctuations. Perhaps the most important idea is one of Wolfgang Pauli's, who suggests that the usual Schrödinger psi functions are only special cases, and only in special cases, the spectroscopic one, give the physical information we want. "I have been working for some time on the quantum theory of aperiodic phenomena." Another problem on which Professor Born and I are working is the law of deflection of, say, an alpha particle by a nucleus. We have not made very much progress with this, but I think we shall soon have it. Certainly the theory will not be so simple when it is done as the old one based on corpuscular dynamics. Professor Kemble was impressed. After less than 3 months in Göttingen, his former student seemed steeped in the excitement of unraveling the mysteries of quantum mechanics. By February 1927, Robert felt so confident of his mastery of the new quantum mechanics that he was writing his Harvard physics professor, Percy Bridgman, to explain its finer points. On the classical quantum theory, an electron in one of two regions of low potential which were separated by a region of high potential could not cross to the other without receiving enough energy to clear impediment. On the new theory, that is no longer true. The electron will spend part of its time in one region and part in the other. On one point, the new mechanics suggests a change, however. The electrons, which are free in the sense defined above, are not free in the sense that they are carriers of equipartition thermal energy. In order to account for the Wiedemann-Franz law, one might have to adopt the suggestion due, I think, to Professor Bohr, that when an electron jumps from one atom to another, the two atoms may exchange momentum. With best greetings, yours, J.R. Oppenheimer.